I am Heidi Holton. I am live from the KEXE studios on the banks of the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. Thank you for tuning in today. We want to welcome you back to our statewide conversation to learn about the pandemic we are living through with statewide leaders. The Lieutenant Governor is away this week, and in a moment, we're going to welcome back the Director of Infectious Disease Epidemiology Prevention and Control Division for the Minnesota Department of Health, Chris Ayersman. This is your opportunity to ask questions about Minnesota's response and plans during the COVID-19 pandemic. If you didn't get a chance to call in or email your question this week, call 612-562-9895 or email covid@ampers.org. We are teaming up with the 18 community radio stations of Ampers Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association to bring you COVID-19 information for the state of Minnesota. Chris Ayersman, thanks so much for your time today. I'm glad you are back with us.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be with you.
Well, there is a lot to ask of you today and a lot to learn, but I want to begin and end our conversation talking about social gatherings with families and friends and holiday weekends like this one, Labor Day. I'm looking for like a realistic picture from you of how we should approach this weekend, specifically how you from the Department of Health have been, how the positive tests have shown up and the contact tracing, what could happen if we don't pay attention to stuff like this? Because we've all heard news about the cases coming out of Sturgis, as well as some wedding celebrations. To help us understand why we need to be safe this weekend.
Well, what we're seeing now in terms of our cases, we're seeing, stable but high number of cases, which is concerning. And what's really different from what we were seeing earlier in the pandemic is that, in May, April, May, the cases that we were seeing linked to, long-term care, to places, jails. And it's not to say that the cases in those settings have completely gone away, not at all. What we've really seen since things have started to open up is that the cases that are occurring from social gatherings and events, in the community have really overtaken any we're seeing at workplaces or, in long-term care at this point. And our concern is that what we're seeing as we delve into these situations is it's really situations in which people aren't following the guidance that we've put forward. So yes, the restaurants and bars have opened and, are able to, provide serving and things like that, but there still are guidelines. And so we're hearing of situations, and this is where we see the transmission. I want to be clear that we're seeing transmission in some of these settings. It's a limited number, but it's when following the guidance. So people are all, gathering together, crowding around the table, not wearing masks, that kind of thing that we've, seen outbreaks with. Again, people all crowding around together, mixing from many different families, many different groups, not socially distancing and not masking. And I think one of the biggest points of confusion has been being outdoors. When we started to be able to open things up and the weather got nicer in Minnesota, we really commented on how beneficial it was that we could be outside because there's a lot of advantages being outside. There's better airflow. There's just more space to distance. And then there's the idea of sunlight. And sunlight can help to inactivate the virus as well as, provides good vitamin E, which is beneficial. So, there's all those good things about being outside, but I think people somehow got the message that if they were, it would eliminate risk. And so they didn't have to worry about, being socially distanced from people who weren't in their household, that they didn't have to worry about, considering masks. They didn't have to worry about large gatherings. And that's really the concern. So if you have plans to see family and it's not the family that have been, in your household or your circle of, I have a circle of eight people. not within that group, then it's really important that you are socially distancing. You can still be together, but you can't be close together. And in terms of masking, people have said, well, do you have to wear masks outside? My recommendation is if you're coming into a situation where there's going to be kind of mingling before everybody kind of sits down in their lawn chair and settles into their spot, that, yeah, you should wear a mask. And then once you're seated and you know that you've established that distance, go ahead and take your mask off. So we don't want people to not be able to see others. And obviously, this is the last weekend of our summer in Minnesota. We just want people to be safe.
Yeah, I think you're right. There is a confusion, especially with restaurants or outdoor seating at restaurants. It's like people are creating new social bubbles every time that they go somewhere, thinking that just by sitting together, everybody's safe, which is not what the guidelines are.
Right. So I just wanted to, clarify. We appreciate that people are taking advantage of being outside. We just want them to know that while things being equal, being outside lowers your risk, it doesn't eliminate it. And so that the other guidance, which I know everyone's tired of, but we still...
Oh, you're kind of cutting out a little bit, Chris. Can you...
Oh, yeah. Is that better?
Yes. There we go. Yep. Oh, no, you're still cutting out.
Oh, I'm not talking anymore. I was waiting for you to ask the next question.
That is Chris. No. That's Chris Ehrsman from the Minnesota Department of Health. You're listening to that statewide conversation, and she's helping us get ready for this Labor Day weekend. I know we've talked to the Lieutenant Governor after the rallies and protests after George Floyd was killed. We didn't see that many, like a big outbreak from that, because in large part people were masked. I know in the Grand Rapids area there's a Black Lives Matters rally today. And so if you're going to be in groups, you still are recommending, I mean, be apart, but masking might be good if you know you're going to be around groups, right?
Absolutely. And you want to be socially distanced. So you want to make sure that even as you're united in whatever cause you're supporting, that you're at least physically distanced a bit.
Well, let's move on to an email question that we got this week. We heard that Minnesota has not, that we have seen almost 79,000 as of today cases of COVID and more than 1,800 deaths. So they are asking, where are we in the arc of this pandemic? They said Dr. Michael Osterholm uses a baseball analogy, and after spending a lot of time in the second inning, he says we're now at the bottom of the fourth, the top of the fifth, which would be halfway through the game. What do you think? What's your favorite analogy to explain where we are at right now?
Well, I think that the reason that Dr. Osterholm is referring to sort of being halfway through the game is simply because, you know, in order for us to really get to the end of the game, or we get to the end of the pandemic, we really need to have the population protected. And that will come with a vaccination. And there's been a lot of talk about, you know, when will vaccines become available? And the issue is, even when they become available, they will be available in more limited supply. And so, you know, it's not that, oh my gosh, we've got vaccines and now we can just vaccinate everyone and this is all done. It will take a while for that to happen. And then the other thing that is part of the equation is really an evaluation of what will the necessary frequency of ongoing vaccination be. So in other words, what will be the duration of protection from vaccination? So I think that, yes, we've gotten through the first couple of innings of this game, and I know Mike really likes baseball, and I do too, so I almost hate to link a favorite pastime to a bad pandemic. Yeah. But I agree that we're moving through, and we're moving into a place where we're going to hopefully have vaccine and be able to get to that population protection. But there are still a number of unknowns, and we still have to get past the fall and getting back. You know, when winter comes, we're going to be indoors again, so there we won't have that benefit of being outside. So I think that if we are in the fourth or fifth inning, We're facing some really tough batters or tough pitchers, depending if you want to be offense or defense. And I don't think that we can let our guard down yet. But I do think that because we're starting to see some positive signs as it relates to vaccine development, that we can talk about this as a game that will ultimately end at some point.
Yeah, this week we heard from Dan from Bemidji. He's got a lot of questions about the vaccine, so you've answered a few of them here, but I want to go through this, what he wrote to us. He said, in the letter that was sent to the governors, that the CDC is planning to begin distribution of a vaccine on November 1st. It says that in the near future, the appropriate state licensing agency will receive the permit applications for the new McKesson distribution facilities. So he asks, which is the appropriate state agency in Minnesota to receive these permit applications?
That actually goes to the Board of Pharmacy. They are the ones that would license a pharmaceutical distributor. They are, Cody Weiberg, the executive director, is very aware of this. They're all poised and ready to go. They're waiting to hear from McKesson.
Okay. And what are the McKesson distribution facilities and where will they be located?
I should point out that McKesson, that currently we have a federal Vaccines for Children program. So this program makes sure that recommended vaccines are available to children across the country, regardless of their ability to pay. And so that program has been ongoing, excuse me, for about more than 20 years now. And so McKesson is the distributor that works with that program. So the good news is that public health, that health systems are all familiar with McKesson as a distributor. And they have a number of depots across the country that are used to distribute, you know, vaccine that is then shipped to individual providers. My expectation is that they will likely add depots, but we don't know where that might be. And just to keep in mind that for the whole country, for the pediatric vaccination, they just have a handful of depots. So, you know, you don't have to worry that there needs to be a depot in Grand Rapids and there needs to be a depot in Marshall, Minnesota. And, you know, they're able to handle that with limited number of depots.
Okay. Dan has more questions for you. He said, obviously, there is not enough vaccine for all people at this early stage. Who's on the priority list to receive vaccines first?
Right now, the National Academies of Science and the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices are the federal bodies that are discussing this issue, and they will be, you know, providing guidance to the states. The intent is that they will, you know, help identify prioritized groups for vaccination. And our understanding is that that will include, you know, essential workers, so healthcare, but then also those groups that are at greatest risk for complications of COVID. So that those are some of the groups that are being discussed. What will happen is that the groups will, that the National Academies of Science and the ACIP will put together their recommendations. And then obviously that has to be operationalized at the state level. And so when we get that, we will look at what does that mean for Minnesota. And, you know, when they give us information about essential workers, you know, what does that mean for us? And an example that I give about how do we make this kind of personal to our state, and it's, I want to be clear, it's not, we're not having this conversation or it's not a decision, but as an example, you know, in Minnesota, we may determine that in January, snowplow drivers are essential. However, Hawaii would have a completely different perspective on that. So that's the type of thing that we expect will be allowed at the state level, that we'll be able to have, you know, some way of personalizing this, if you will, for our state.
Is there a concern that those folks who get the vaccine may not have gone through those normal lengthy FDA trials?
You know, we are very committed at the Department of Health to making sure that we can, you know, deliver vaccine when it becomes available, but only if that vaccine has been determined to be safe and effective. And so there are a number of stages of vaccine testing that would need to happen in order for that to be the case. And so before we will participate, we want to ensure that the appropriate steps are met. And so we're very committed to that. That's been brought up and people have expressed concerns, and we, are committed to, until the ACIP makes a recommendation for vaccination, which would indicate that it had met the safety profile, then we will be, cautious and not necessarily offering the vaccine, or at least if the vaccine was offered, it would be very clear where we were at in the evaluation process.
Kind of another side of a vaccine question here. What is the plan of the state to address people who have skepticism and are anti-vaxxers?
Well, certainly, our intent is to provide clear information about the benefits of the vaccine. You know, what does it mean to get vaccinated? Why is it important to get vaccinated? All of those things. We recognize that initially there won't be enough vaccine. So I suppose if there are individuals who don't have any interest in being vaccinated, that I guess helps with the lineup of people who want to get vaccinated. But we do know that it's important overall that when we have a safe vaccine, that we have a large proportion of our population who's protected from COVID, because that's what will allow us to open up society. So we're going to do our best to provide good information and good education about the value of vaccine. But we do know that there will be some people who choose not to get vaccinated, and then they will face, the consequences of the disease. And it may limit, I don't know what expectations there will be. The vaccine will not be required, but it will certainly limit their ability to interact safely with others.
We are talking to Chris Harrisman from the Minnesota Department of Health today. It is the statewide conversation on COVID-19. We got this question in this week through Facebook. There are many, many people that think that COVID is a way overstated concept, and that once the U.S. election happens in November, all the concerns will drop away. These people think that people on the left are the ones trying to use COVID to get the upper hand and scare people. What do you say to people like that?
Well, I will just kind of be clear that I am a career scientist at the Department of Health, and so I started out as a student worker and moved to epidemiologist, supervisor, manager, and now director. And so I have served under multiple administrations. And so for me and my team, this is not political. Our work is based on the science and what we're seeing with case numbers. There's been some talk about, is this a conspiracy, that type of thing. And my reaction to that is that, man, if I was going to be part of a conspiracy, I would have chosen one that didn't require me to work 7 days a week for months on end, long, long hours, because that's really what's been the result of COVID in our response to it, and what it takes to be able to respond to the volume of cases and the disease that we're seeing. So I realize that, unfortunately, this public health response in this pandemic has gotten politicized, and that has had really devastating consequences, actually, on our disease transmission, because some people aren't following guidance just because they think, oh, this is just political. But I'll tell you, as someone who is a career scientist and a civil servant, and not a political appointee, that what we're seeing is reasonable, and our team has been killing themselves to respond. And we would not, as I said, if we were choosing a conspiracy, we would have chosen one that was a lot less work.
Yeah. Well, let's move into some of the questions that came in this week having to do with school and colleges coming back. A concerned mother wrote to us. She said, my college-age daughter worked all summer serving food at an outdoor restaurant. Thankfully, she did not get COVID, even though she dealt with the public frequently. She mentioned to me that she thinks she already had the disease without the symptoms and that she's now immune. I was surprised to hear this, and now I worry that she has found a way to see herself as invulnerable as she heads back to college. I've heard similar ideas from other people. I'm wondering, do you think there are a bunch of people who had asymptomatic COVID and now are immune, or is this a pipe dream?
Well, we certainly know that there's evidence of, you know, asymptomatic individuals who've been able to transmit disease to others. So we do know that, you know, there are people who haven't had symptoms who've tested positive and been infectious. So we know that exists. I think it's probably unwise if you do not have a COVID test result to assume that, oh, I was one of the people that happened to have asymptomatic disease and now I don't have to protect myself or take precautions. I think that's probably a dangerous perspective. We do know that the college age group is a particularly challenging group just simply because it's an age when, you know, the whole world's before you and you feel pretty invincible. But the problem is that with COVID, you're not necessarily going to be invincible. And we've certainly had, you know, we've seen serious disease in our young adult population, obviously not the same as we're seeing in our elder population, but there still has been some serious disease. And what's being made known now is that there are likely ongoing long-term effects of even mild disease, may have, you know, heart damage, that type of thing. And so our concern is that, you know, we want people to avoid getting COVID as much as possible. And so I would say for this woman's daughter to really say, you know what, unless you had a confirmed test, that you really shouldn't be considering yourself to have had COVID, you should still take the precautions. And then to keep in mind that even people with milder disease can have long-term consequences.
We had another question about college, which I think you kind of answered there, but they are curious how you think it's going to unfold. We've already heard about some colleges that have outbreaks from parties. Isn't there even more risk to the public if those colleges close down and then they send those students home?
You know, actually that listener has some good thoughts, and we've actually had conversations like that with the higher ed, because the question is, well, if students are in a more structured learning setting where there are more checks and balances and controls, is that a better place to be than, you know, as this person said, sending them home? And so that certainly is a consideration. I think the biggest challenge at this point is that the transmission that we have been seeing in that age group has nothing to do with the educational institution and really more to do with the choices that they're making in their spare time, you know, going to bars, congregating together. And so that is really, you know, the biggest challenge that we face and the biggest concern. And certainly we're trying to put messages out, but it's really important that it's peers that are being clear about what's important to them and that, you know, they say, hey, we want to continue in-person learning. We want to be able to stay on campus and we want to be safe. And that may perhaps have a greater impact than me, who's kind of a mom voice, saying the same thing.
Yeah. Well, we've already talked about that there have been some politics involved in this pandemic. There are also people who are profiting from this pandemic, some fraudsters, and we've been reminding people that if they get a call in from a contact tracer, if they're asked social security number or for money or anything like that, it's not a true call. But I'm curious about what those calls are like, because if some people, you know, don't believe in this pandemic, which is seems strange, will they give you all the information that you need? And what are those phone calls like?
Well, when we, you know, if when someone is tested and they test positive, then there's a, obviously they'll hear from their healthcare provider, but then we have a team who will reach out to that person and, you know, talk to them about their illness, ask them some questions. As you said, we never ask for Social Security. We never ask for money. We never ask for anything other than stay home and who might you have been exposed to. So, you know, we'll ask for information about your illness, about, you know, locations that you visited, potential exposures you might have had, that type of thing. But we will not ask for money or for, you know, Social Security information. So I realize that asking perhaps questions about, you know, illness might feel personal, but we would never ask for information that would put anyone in a dangerous place related to their financial situation.
Okay. We just had someone call in who said, what should we say to someone who says this is no worse than a bad flu season?
You know, I have a colleague who acquired COVID through the healthcare provider for their children, developed COVID. The kids then developed COVID, and this individual who is a young athlete has been flat out for 6 days with COVID and is very much willing to say that this is very different from influenza. So I think it's important. There's a whole range of illnesses that we see. I mean, obviously we have individuals who have died from COVID, even at young ages. We have individuals who are, you know, hospitalized in intensive care, intubated. You know, we have some people, as I talked about, who may have asymptomatic disease or milder disease. But the bottom line is that this virus does bad stuff. So whether it does bad stuff to you that you can feel and is evident right when you have the disease, or if that is something that is discovered later, that it, you know, there's been cardiac damage or something like that. We know that, and we're learning more and more, that this is a really tough virus. And so it's important to keep in mind that people should take it seriously. I'll say this too, you know, people say, oh, it's just like flu. We spend a lot of time and energy telling people that influenza is nothing to sneeze at, that you need to take that seriously too and get vaccinated for influenza. So to kind of make flu seem like nothing is a little bit problematic too, because we know that kills thousands of people every year across the country.
Before we go, I heard you earlier this week say there were 50 confirmed cases of Minnesotans that had been at Sturgis and one death. What are the numbers now? And then just another reminder for the Labor Day weekend ahead.
Sure. We are at 51 cases associated with Sturgis and the one death. And, you know, again, as you are heading into your weekend, you know, please enjoy yourselves. Please take time to enjoy the outdoors, but remember that even when you're outside, it's important that you are keeping socially distanced, you're avoiding large groups of people, and that you're masking when you're in a transition spot with other people. And with that in mind, I think you can have a really great weekend.
Well, we've run out of time. That's Chris Ayersman from the Minnesota Department of Health, Director of Infectious Disease Epidemiology, Prevention, and Control Division. Thanks for your time. Hope you get a little downtime this weekend.
Oh, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This broadcast, a collaboration of community radio stations throughout the state in partnership with AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. Listen to the full conversation, kaxe.org. If you would like to ask a question next week, email us, covid@ampers.org, or call 612-562-9895. This interview with Chris Ayersman and past statewide conversations with the Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan are available at kaxe.org and ampers.org. I'm Heidi Holton for KAXE, KBXE. Thanks for listening.